ब्लड थर्स्टी वेजिटेरियन में आपके मेजबान रिचर्ड वेलगेस और जॉन टेलरे को आपका स्वागत करते हैं। सुनते रहिए, हम आपके लिए पेश करेंगे लोकप्रिय संचार माध्यम और संस्कृति से घिरे वार्तालाप और वाद संवाद, असुविधाजनक पर विचार जागरूक करने वाले संसर्ग, संचलित विचारों का विश्लेषण, राजनैतिक हलचल का विवरण, खान पान के प्रति हमारा प्यार, नए पुराने संगीत सितारे। तो हमारे साथ सुनते रहिए ब्लड थर्स्टी वेजिटेरियन।
Cool. Thank you. That was my good friend Raj, who's not in the area anymore.
Where is he?
He got a job in San Diego or something. He was a master's degree computer science guy from SUNY, and he was working for a local company. And I asked him at the cafe one day, any of you who've heard this before have heard it before, but we haven't played this one in a while.
Whoa.
That's like deep. But he, I asked him if he would do an intro for us in his native language. And he said, sure, I'll do it in Hindi.
There you go.
And then he said, and I know a ton of Hindi dialects, and I can do all those for you, too. And I was just like, well, all right there. Slow down there, Fireball. Let's just get the first one done.
All right, Chief.
So there it is.
Cool. Anyways, what's happening, Slick?
Well, I don't know there, Sizzle Chest. There's not a lot going on. What are we drinking? We cracked it finally. John's stomach feels better.
Yeah, this is the stuff that I talked about last week. It's Lake Breeze, Langhorne Creek, 2001, Bernuda. It's a product of Australia.
It's a blend. Shiraz Cabernet blend.
There you go.
Yum.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'm liking. Me like.
Mmm. Fire. Bad.
Wine good.
So, you know, I'm going to talk about that dreaded Tour de France thing again.
Yeah.
And I'm only going to say this. You know, there's still a lot of
stuff
to go on.
Still steroids in his system? Or testosterone?
Well, I don't know. I don't know anything about that. I only know what was reported. But the thing that I pointed out that bothered me last week is that none of the major media outlets were reporting that his claim was that his testosterone was normal, but the epi was really, really low, skewing possibly skewing the results of the test in a way that maybe the people who designed the test didn't anticipate. Because when they designed the test, they were probably only thinking of high testosterone levels.
Yep.
They forgot about the fact that a ratio is open-ended. Mm-hmm. Either way, if one's high or one's low. Anyway, so finally, I was doing some Floyd Landis searching, and I found a newspaper, pretty famous one, that finally reported that fact. And it
the
was
Inquirer?
The Wall Street Journal.
Oh, cool.
But, I mean, hello, why aren't sports sections and people, you know, why aren't different media outlets reporting it?
No, what I am hearing from different media outlets is they keep repeating the same, as far as I know, undocumented fact of the synthetic testosterone being in his system.
Yeah, and they because the ratio is 11-1, the implication is that his testosterone was high, so they just sort of say it by implication. You know, right. He was found with a high testosterone level, and that's not true at all. So anyway, kudos to the Wall Street Journal for finally reporting that, and hopefully maybe Landis will come to the table with a lot of interesting evidence after his hip replacement and when he contests this and see what happens. And again, if he did it, he did it. Hang him, you know? Mm-hmm. But I'm just not convinced, based on everything I've read so far, that there's not something awry here, a little askew.
Ask you.
Yeah.
Yep. And, I'm going to change subjects here because I think we've talked about that way too much.
Yeah, go ahead.
Speaking of giant orbs.
What?
The planets. I guess the scientists who have control over this naming of something as being a planet or claiming something is a planet.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're meeting behind closed doors to actually come out with the official definition of planet. And
that's long overdue.
Yeah, and I think that they're sort of grandfathering in Pluto, and they're gonna have two sorts of classifications.
I thought Pluto already was a planet.
Right, but there was some debate recently.
Well, there's also some debate that the Moon and the Earth are a twin planet.
Well, yeah. But I think that what they're going to do is come out with an official definition, because they know that very soon we're going to be finding lots more stuff out in the Kuiper Belt, because the 10th planet, which has been nicknamed Xena... Warrior princess.
Well, as it should be.
And that one's actually, they think it's bigger than Pluto, so they sort of have to you know, rearrange our expectations of what planet means. So I think that what they're going to say is that there are going to be planets of a certain size, and then after that cutoff, they're going to be called minor planets or small planets or something like that. So our solar system is going to become larger. We're going to have at least 10 or 11 planets in the solar system, and kids are going to be learning about those.
Well, cool. I'll be learning about them, too.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Bring them all into the family. Bring them into the fold.
Bring them in. Bring them into the... are they orbiting in the plane of the ecliptic?
I think they are. I think only one that only we know one. Of isn't. Yeah, it's Uranus, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, well, I'm going to change the subject again.
Oh, great.
And I mentioned this to you a minute ago, but there is another Rocky film coming out.
Woo! Oh, crap.
How cool is that?
Not one bit. What do you mean, how cool is that?
Well, it might be cool. I mean, if you overlook the fact that they made far too many of the sequels, the first Rocky film was a great film.
It was.
He didn't
Academy
win.
Academy Award winner.
Absolutely. Stallone wrote it. He got, I think, Best Picture and Best Script
Screenplay,
that year.
Yep.
And, you know, the guy actually apparently has some writing talent somewhere deep down when he's not making, like, tough guy films or these other pieces of crap he's made of late. But, so there, it's going to be called Rocky Balboa. And from what I understand on the Internet Movie Database, it is, let's see, Adrian is dead, died of cancer.
Cool.
He is, well, they're actually making it, I mean, right off the bat, it's different.
I thought she died in an off-world excursion fighting aliens on Mars.
Yes. And Sorry. So anyway, yeah, Adrian is dead. So he, you know, I don't know if he will scream Adrian or not. So Adrian's dead. He's estranged from his son, and he's moved back to Philadelphia, and he has a little cafe or something that he runs. And then somehow he gets back into boxing. I think he's in his 60s, and then he somehow gets back into boxing. So, you know, maybe there's a story there. At least it's a little different. The wife is dead. He's estranged from his son. I don't know. He's writing it. Maybe it'll be a winner, you know?
Is there going to be a big Russian guy? This time it's going to be a big Saudi guy, probably.
It'll be a big, you know, the Iron Sheik.
That's right.
And we'll get Sergeant Slaughter out of mothballs to fight him, you know? And then, of course, in the 80s and the late 70s, there was that Russian wrestler, too, Nikolai Volkov. But anyway.
Do you remember the Polish hammer?
Ivan Putski.
That's right.
He was my favorite. He was like, he had some guns. We're talking about wrestling, and yet we're talking about a Stallone film. You know, there's, I saw that guy.
What guy? You're so specific.
Dustin Hoffman. I saw him on Inside the Actors Studio like earlier in the week on Bravo TV. It was a recent one. And of course, they talked about all the great work he's done. And he has a very interesting film coming out. At least it sounds really cool.
Rain Man 2, The Wrath of Khan?
Nope. Nope. Tom Cruise won't be anywhere near this. Although a sort of a modern, iconic female actress that all the geeks have latched on to will be in it with him.
Natalie Portman?
Yes, she's in it. But the film, I think, is called something like Mr. Magorium's Magic Emporium, and it's a modern fairy tale for adults, kind of like Willy Wonka. And when he described it, I thought, wow, that sounds like Willy Wonka. Hoffman plays a man who's 243 years old and owns a really cool toy shop with all kinds of magical and mystical toys. And he's either retiring or he's going to die, and he brings the Portman character in to manage the toy shop. But just from the way they described it, it sounds really cool. I think it's going to be out in November. It
sounds just like Willy Wonka, except for toys instead of chocolate.
Well, I've heard Big Meets Toys is kind of, or Big Meets Willy Wonka is.
That's probably how they pitch these things to these studios.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the only way they can get the green light is if they can relate it to something else that was a success.
Well, I think you're going to get a green light on a Hoffman project. I mean, there's a there's a high likelihood of success when you got a name like him in there. I mean, he's only. God, how many Academy Awards has he been nominated for? It's
70.
Like 7 or 8. I think he's 1-2.
I think 900.
Yeah.
He's approaching a million.
He's probably my favorite living actor, actually. I'm a big Hoffman.
He's still alive?
Fan. He's 68. He looks great. Or 69. Somewhere around there.
Wow.
He's still alive? Was that a joke?
That was a joke. Actually, all they need to make a movie a success is that guy who does the intros and all the trailers. You know what I'm... The guy with the massive voice. In a world gone mad.
Oh, okay.
You know, one of those things?
Yeah.
In a world where toys rule chickens.
The guy who does the SpongeBob voice, I heard him on public radio a few months ago.
Cause he's from Syracuse.
And he used to do just normal radio voiceover work. And you kind of hear it in these like Oprah commercials for like the sad shows. But I finally realized how you do the voice, how you inflect your voice. You inflect down at the end. Next on Oprah.
That's right. You know, and when very
you,
sad.
Yeah, when you inflect down... is when it sounds sad. I know this is totally related to nothing and nobody cares, but
he's anything on the show.
Yeah, he's a good voice guy, and it was really fun listening. I'm not a SpongeBob fan. I've only seen it a little bit. But
his name is, I think, Tom Kenny. But yeah, he's from Syracuse.
So is the NBC baseball guy there.
And so is Bobcat Goldthwait. And I think that Bobcat and Tom Kenny and those guys, they all know each other.
And so is Rod Serling.
Is he?
He's a Syracusan. There's a lot of Serling still in the book.
And you know who's from Utica?
I don't know.
Annette Funicello.
Yes, she is.
That's right.
And, you know, Andy Van Slyke, when asked where he's from, once said New Hartford. And instead of saying it's like near Utica or a suburb of Utica, he said, well, it's near Cooperstown, which is
well,
like an hour.
That's a good way to say it. Yeah.
That's a good hour drive, you know, from
New
Hartford
to Cooperstown.
He's
nowhere near Cooperstown, though. He's not making
well,
it.
Well, he was a good player.
But he's not making it to Cooperstown.
No,
I'm
he's probably not going to make it to Cooperstown. But anyway, did I have any other thoughts on the whole... Oh, and by the way, at the end of the Twilight Zones, I don't know if you've ever noticed, but at the end of all the Twilight Zone episodes, it says Cayuga Productions because he had a camp on Cayuga Lake, Mr. Serling.
Yeah.
And his name is not Rodney, by the way. It's Rodman.
Rodman.
Rodman Serling.
One did of my he favorite. Have tattoos all over his body and dressed like a woman?
He did, and he wore cool thin ties and jackets with neat lapels. Submitted for your perusal. The only thing not cool about him was the smoking thing.
Yeah, he
on
smoked
camera.
On the show.
like a chimney.
Well, back then it was good for you. It was actually medicinal.
Yeah, doctors used to come out in favor. I remember seeing commercials like, doctors say this cigarette causes less throat irritation. Oh, good. Let's smoke the one that causes, it's like light cigarettes, you know, light cancer is what you get out of that.
Studies show that your pillow will be less black in the morning using these cigarettes.
From the mucus that rolls out of your facial orifices. That's right. I don't know. Anyway, so we got a tune.
Yeah, let's kick it.
This is the Devin Garamone Band on a new record, which I think is called Lovebirds, or it's at least new to me. It might be an older record, but what's this song called?
Blue Suede Org.
BlueSuedeOrg.com.net. Check it out. Thank you. cool track.
Yeah.
The Devin Garamone band featuring Jeff Palmer on Hammond organ and bass pedals, John Abercrombie on guitar, and he's the real deal. He's like a big, major jazz guy, and he's a hired gun, I guess, on the records. He doesn't tour with them or anything. Devin Garamone on sax and Victor Lewis on drums. Everybody say Victor. Oh, that's his name, Victor. Never mind.
You're gone.
I've got a really funny thing that we should play on the show. It's from Victor Wooten's Live in America double live set, and Bootsy Collins played a little intro for him, and he's got the crowd like, everybody say Victor, you know, kind of the way Bootsy would do it.
Was Bootsy wearing those big star glasses?
Well, of course, yeah, the star sunglasses on. You know what? I forgot to do this on the intro. I want to thank Chris, my good friend Chris. You met her at the Biddies show.
Yes, I did.
She gave me some fabulous sweet corn grown out of their little mini, well, it's not mini, it's a giant garden. It's a mini farm they have at their house. And she gave me some homegrown garlic, too.
Wow.
Very aromatic.
I'm glad you said garlic. I thought she was going to say something else. Or you were going to say homegrown. What comes after homegrown, usually?
I'm at a loss.
The wacky tobacky.
Oh, I don't think they're growing any of the Mary Jane up there.
No? Well, that's a good thing. We don't want to out her.
No. But great stuff. And she gave it to me after the film last night. Had a little for lunch, a little bit of that corn.
Mm-hmm.
Yum, yum, yum. So we got a segment.
Yeah, in this segment, and I think this is going to be an ongoing segment for a while. I think that we should do this. I think this should be our thing. Every once in a while, we get emails from everyone.
Well, that are these, in particular.
Well, we get a lot. And I see them all over the place on the net. These are these memes that are flying around. If you don't know what a meme is, it's basically just some thing that someone puts on the internet and passes it around, and it gets a life of its own. It's got like this viral expansion.
Well, they link to your blog, and then right. You link to the people you nominate to do the meme.
That's right. I mean, the word meme comes from memetics. If you want to look at it, it's a Richard Dawkins kind of theory of ideas that are self-replicating instead of just, it's a biological thing. It's an idea.
He was great on Hogan's Heroes, by the way.
Richard. Different guy.
Oh, and the game show. Family Feud. Richard Dawkins.
He kissed everyone, and that's how the memes got around.
That's right. Just talk about your viral propagation. It was from Richard Dawson.
No, different guy. Anyways, we've got these memes that keep floating around. People keep passing them to us. So what we're going to do is instead of passing them around through email or putting them on the blog.
I'm going to put mine on the blog tonight, though.
Well, we can do that.
Yeah, I'm going to post mine. I told Leo, the guy who nominated us from neuralgourmet.com, that I'd put mine up there after we taped the show.
All right, so here are the ground rules. We get these memes. They're essentially a list of questions that you have to answer, and it's really just to spark the conversation and to keep that conversation going. We answer these questions on this theme, and then we pass it along to everyone else.
It's a meme theme.
Right. So what we suggest you do is you take the questions that we're going to be spitting out here in a minute, and you pass them around and start conversations with other people. So,
yeah, and
with
John,
that,
John had the idea to make it a segment on the show, yeah. And I thought it was good. I like it. We've done a couple of the memes. I don't even remember what the other ones were about at the moment. Right? We'd have to go back to the blog.
There was memes of meme of four, where you do four things of this, four things of that.
But I don't remember what they were, though. They were like top four something.
I think it was just four of something, and that was the theme, four of whatever.
The meme theme.
Yeah. This one is books. And there are a whole bunch of questions here. I think there are nine questions.
There are nine questions. So let's actually just read the questions.
Sure.
A book that changed your life. A book you've read more than once. A book you would take or you would want if you were on a desert island. A book that made you laugh. A book that made you cry. A book you wish you had written. Wish you had written.
A book that you wish had been written. I thought it was.
Yeah.
Which is a totally different thing. One that
I thought this was a book you wish you had written. You.
Well, you can answer it that way if you want. The way I answered it was a book you wish had been written.
Oh, well, that's interesting. I interpreted that differently. Question seven was a book you wish hadn't been written. Number eight is a book you're currently reading. And number nine is a book you've been meaning to read.
Yeah. So let's kick it off. Do you want to go first?
Okay, I'll go first. Book that changed your life. And I'm actually going back to my formative years here because I can't think of one recently.
One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish?
Nope. And I'm not going to say Dr. Seuss either, because that was something I thought about long and hard. But I was really into, like in fourth, fifth, sixth grade and whatnot, I was into the Encyclopedia Brown
series. I knew that was coming.
And I know I've mentioned them before on the show.
Yeah, that's why I knew it was coming.
And it's not just one book. It's a series of books. But I'll just say Encyclopedia Brown because he's the character. And he was sort of a nerdy kid who solved all the mysteries of the neighborhood. He was a private detective. Or at least he wanted to be, but he was like in sixth grade or something, or junior high. Mm-hmm. So the Encyclopedia Brown books I really liked just because there was a lot of critical thinking involved, and you had to solve the puzzle. They didn't tell you the solution. You had to look it up in the back. It was like they would basically, you would read the case, if you will, and then you had to solve it too. And then if you couldn't solve it, you could look it up in the back and see what the answer was. And there were dozens of these Encyclopedia Brown books, and it's so funny because I hadn't even thought about them in years, and a few years ago I mentioned them in passing to all of my peer group, and everybody I know had read them too, which is
I've never read a single Encyclopedia
Brown
book.
I'm a little bit surprised by that, actually. So you should read one.
Now?
Sure. We just read one. I mean, there's like...
Should you put the thing on pause so I can start?
No, not now. But,
oh, okay.
You know, go to the bookstore and see if you can find just one of the little Encyclopedia Brown books. There's like five cases in each book, and, you know, each one's like a chapter, if you will. And they're really great, and they really helped form logic and critical thinking and good stuff. Loved it.
Yeah. Well, the book that I've got for that, one book that changed my life, was A Stranger in a Strange Land by Heinlein.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the story of a kid who is a human kid from Earth, gets raised by Martians on Mars. I mean, this was written long before we knew that Mars was just basically a desert world. But raised by Martians, as a Martian, learns Martian ways and totally different way of thinking. And then he comes back to Earth and is essentially walking amongst Earthlings. And he's got a totally different mindset. And it sort of forces the human mindset and human ways of being to be exposed for what they are. And some things aren't so great. The reason why I say it changed my life is because it forces you to think about what you're doing and why you're doing it and the way in the way that things are in society. And sometimes those things are the way they are just because they've always been that way,
mm-hmm.
not because there's been any thought into it.
That's actually a bit of a topic for the movie review I'm going to do.
Oh, cool.
Things are that way. There's no good reason for it, you know?
Yeah. And one of the other reasons why I thought it was great was because it talked a lot about some of these powers that he actually learned to have as a Martian because they were purely a different way of thinking. He changed his way of thinking and he was able to do things that humans couldn't do. So I think that everyone should read that book because it really mm-hmm. shines a light on society.
Yeah. Okay, question number two, a book you've read more than once, mm-hmm. and this is a book I've read more than twice. This is a book I've read more than thrice. I don't know how many times I've read it, but I know you've read it, and it's Rocket Boys, October Sky. It was originally released by Homer Hickam. It was called Rocket Boys, but you can't find it in stores under that name anymore. Since the film came out, it's October Sky.
I've read it exactly twice.
Okay, and you've probably seen the film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the story of Homer Hickam, a guy who grew up in a little coal mining town called Coalwood, West Virginia. And he dreamt big. He wanted to go work for NASA and go into space and do all kinds of stuff. So he and his friends, I know most of you've probably heard me talk about this before. I think we talked about it,
yep,
actually.
Absolutely.
As homework, maybe even. But anyway, he and his friends, their big goal was to win a science fair because they thought they could all get scholarships out of it. And they ended up winning the science fair. They won the National Science Fair,
yep,
in propulsion, rocketry and propulsion. And Homer went on to do great things. He's a wonderful writer. There's three or four books in this series now. I think it's three, and he's contemplating a fourth one.
Fourth book in the trilogy?
Exactly. I emailed him and said, well, I think he said he was contemplating a fourth book, and I said, well, much like Douglas Adams, your Coalwood trilogy should probably include more than three books, too.
That's right.
And he thought that was an appropriate kind of comparison because he's a big fan of the Hitchhiker's Guide stuff. I know you're rereading that right now.
Yep.
In fact, the book is down.
You're stealing my thunder, man.
Oh, I'm sorry. But anyway, Rocket Boys, October Sky, it's a great read. And, I mean, it's funny, it's sad. There's so much cool stuff. And who knew this coal mining town of like 500 people, there could be so much interesting drama and intrigue going on. Anyway.
What's great about that book, and I don't want to steal your thunder on that one either.
Steal away.
What's great about that book is
like disco.
I'm not even going there. It shows that it doesn't matter where you're from. It just shows that if you're a decent person and if you've got a lot of great ideas that you can go very far.
And
that's what I love about it.
Yeah. Good stuff. Oh, and by the way, he did go work for NASA. Ultimately, he went to the, he volunteered for the Korean War, I think, or Vietnam. It would have been Vietnam. And he did go to work for NASA, and now he's just a very prolific writer, and he writes outside of the science category. He writes all kinds of cool stuff, actually. I've read some of his science. He writes science fiction, too. Mm-hmm. I read some of his science fiction. It's good stuff. Anyway.
All right, my book that I've read more than once, mm-hmm. and I don't even know how many times I've read this book. It's actually a bunch of books and short stories. The Martian Chronicles, Bradbury.
Wow, Mars. That's quite.
I've got a Mars theme going. I didn't even know it.
Well, okay, yeah.
And not, I'm not going to even go into a lot of it, but very much like Stranger in a Strange Land, what it does is it's not about Mars. It's about Earth and humanity. And that's what a lot of classic sci-fi does. You know, Heinlein, Bradbury, those guys, they like to shine a light on humanity by using
they take it out of
technique.
Context. Yeah, and it's still, the stories still apply. The message is still valid.
Yeah, and again, I think everyone should read that because it does talk about, you know, some of the bravado of man.
Well, I actually, for a book I've read more than once, I was going to put Red Mars, the Mars Trilogy by Kim Stanley Robinson. And if you haven't read that...
And I haven't. That's one of those books that I've been meaning to read, but it's not the one that I've
got
on my list.
The single best piece of science fiction I've ever read.
And really?
It's not on my list. Yeah. The Mars Trilogy is genius, period. Yeah.
I'm going to have to put those on my list even higher because...
I can lend it to you. I got it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you done?
I'm done.
Question number three, what book would you have on a desert island? And again, I'm going to kind of, the Encyclopedia Brown, my first thing. There are many books in that series, but it's one character. This is one writer. And I would, if I had to be on a desert island, I would want the collected works of William Shakespeare. Because at least that would take a great deal of time to read and understand.
He's a hack.
Yeah, what did he know? He's an idiot.
So he wore silly pants, too.
Well, he wore the frilly collars on the shirts, too,
yeah.
You know, and the
Elizabethan collar.
Elizabethan type thing. Exactly. How'd you manage to work that in?
I don't know.
So, and I guess I could get away with it being one book if it was like the collected works on one DVD and I had some sort of digital reader with me or something. But I have seen...
Yeah, you'd run out of power quickly.
I have seen some pretty thick collections of Shakespeare's work. You know, I actually have seen all of his plays and sonnets in one volume, so that would be the volume I'm talking about. Yeah.
What I'd take on a desert island is Dune.
Marianne.
Appropriately enough.
Or Ginger. No, wait a minute.
No, I'm talking books.
Oh. Yeah. Dune.
Dune.
I knew there'd be a lot of sci-fi here.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a geek. Yeah, Dune, Frank Herbert. Actually, I would take all of the Dune books, partly because, one, I never finished all of them. I got partway through, but the first Dune book, it really gripped me, and I'm one of the few people on this planet that loves the Dune movie that was done by, what's his name? The guy, Twin Peaks guy.
Kyle MacLachlan. No, he was in it.
No.
Yeah, I know who you mean.
Yeah. I don't care who the guy is.
Well, you were a Twin Peaks fan, as I recall. As well.
Briefly. I sort of got over that phase.
David
Lynch.
Lynch, yeah.
Yeah.
Blue Velvet. Yeah. Great film.
He's a great director in certain ways, in certain films. But I loved Dune because it was very true to the books. Some people might slap me for that, but I think it was very true to the books.
Well, the gigantic flaw with the first Dune film, or the Dune film was, well, I guess it's the first Dune film, was
the
that it, it had, well, no, didn't Sci-Fi Channel do a made-for-TV series of films?
Yeah, but what Dune? I mean, it there wasn't like a Dune 2.
No, right. Except they had Stink, the guy from The Police.
Yeah, I mean...
The best part was that he died.
I think, the character died, and I don't think the actual actor died.
Actually, you remember we played some music by a couple of artists who play the Chapman Stick?
Yes.
Patrick Stewart played a musician in Dune, mm-hmm. and that instrument he had was a Chapman Stick. They painted it gold.
Yep.
And they actually used music from Emmett Chapman, the inventor of the Chapman Stick. They used music from his CDs, Parallel Galaxies, which is it's called, I have it at home, to be the music for Dune, which is really cool. It's just a little dovetail with some of the stuff we've done in the past.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm going to say one thing about Dune, we'll go on. The reason why I like this book so much is because I think it creates a rich world. It's one of those, I don't know, it's one of those universe building types of books where it's not just normal people flying around in spaceships. This is about way out in the future, like the year 10,000. And it shows how people have still remained the same, even though there are some wacky things going on. You still have fighting over territory. You still have monarchies.
Well, and the thing that I found interesting was that one of the commodities that was traded was something called spice.
Yes.
And for centuries, ships filled with spices would be traded for ships filled with gold.
Yes, you know, and it's the same thing, planet to planet, but you've got this one resource people are fighting over and fighting over control mm-hmm. over it. Yeah, it's very, very rich universe to delve into.
Universe.
And the reason why I want it on my desert island is because I want to be able to spend time actually in this universe, because I haven't been able to spend a lot of time. There are so many books. In fact, I think Frank Herbert's son is carrying on this torch, and he's writing some of the other books with Kevin Anderson.
Spider Cider.
Spider Cider?
That's a Gilligan's Island reference.
You're crazy.
Question number four, a book that made you laugh. And once again, I'm going back to my youth when I kind of discovered...
One fish, two fish, red fish, blue.
No. And it's not Theodore Geisel again. It's not him. In sixth grade or seventh grade, I discovered in this far-off bookcase...
100 fart books? Or 100 fart jokes?
Nope, not even that. That would be number two on my list.
You said number two.
I discovered a Woody Allen short story collection called Getting Even, and there is some great stuff in there.
Wow.
And I steal from that style, like if I write comedy, like for some reason I'm dry, but last year I was writing a lot of comedy on the blog, and it reads, I'm not saying I'm as funny as Woody Allen, but I mean, I stole his style, you know, and I stole it right from that book, Getting Even, because I still have it. I took it from like my class and never returned it. I still
steal
have it.
Steal this book, it said on the back.
Exactly. It said, steal this book, Getting Even. And so anyway, Woody Allen, short stories, good stuff, funny stuff, definitely made me laugh.
Well, the one book that made me laugh and continues to make me laugh and is making me laugh at this moment.
I figured.
I mean, and I'm sorry, it's a cliche. And
I was going to use it, but...
It's Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, because it is so freaking funny. I think there's a joke on every single page that I just laugh out loud. I mean, I hate to overuse that, but literally I laugh out loud. I was reading...
LOL.
Yeah, and that's pretty lame, but... I took my kids to the Y. They had a swimming lesson this morning, and I was sitting in the bleachers reading this because I'm rereading it, and I was laughing out loud, and I'm looking around hoping people aren't thinking I'm a wacko. But
well, they see you reading, so it's okay.
Well, yeah, but it's...
Wacko.
And I've read the book before, and it's still funny. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm going to reread it. I'm going to read it again. I've read it a couple times myself. That could have been my book I've read more than once.
Yep.
Book that made you cry. I got a question mark.
Nothing makes you cry. You're a steel human being.
No, there's films that I cry in, you know, there's films that I cry at. I mean, that scene at the end of
Rocky.
About Schmidt, where he thinks he's a failure, and then there's that beautiful little crayon drawing by the kid with the sun, and it's a very happy thing, and then he realizes his life isn't a waste. That just totally blows me away every time.
You're
I see
avoiding
it.
The question, I see.
I can't think of a book that made me cry. I really can't. And it's not that I don't cry, it's just I'm having trouble remembering a moment when I cried from a book.
Editor's note, Rich is a very closed human being. All right, I've got one that made me cry, and I'm not afraid to admit it. Of Mice and Men, Steinbeck.
Wow, yeah. You know, we read that in 10th grade. I don't remember crying in the class, but I was even more
closed
then.
Well, I didn't cry in class, but I read this on my own.
I wasn't saying you did, but, you know, I
there have been
remember.
Times where I've cried in class and had food thrown at me. You know, anyway... Of Mice and Men, yeah, Lenny, this big,
absolutely,
this
yeah.
big galoot who is, you know, basically a pure human being,
yep.
you know, and he was simple, and he died at the end. He was sacrificed at the end, and it was a very, very sad thing because there was no way out. He had to die at the end of it, and mm-hmm. I felt pretty awful about that.
Good one. Still got nothing.
Still got nothing. You're not even going to try to glom onto that one.
Well, I would cry if I read that now.
Okay.
Let's see, number six.
You're still half human.
Book you wish you had written. I interpreted this as a book. Is this the one we were in conflict about? I just read this too quickly, but I thought it was a book that you wish you had written, not you wish had been written. But my choice would be a book by a great writer, science writer named Andy Chaikin, A Man on the Moon. That's what the From the Earth to the Moon,
right.
Tom Hanks series was based on, this book. And what's great about this book is that just like the From the Earth to the Moon miniseries that was on HBO and is now available on DVD, this guy had to do so much research, and doing that research must have been a blast. Interviewing astronauts, just hanging out with them. I mean, I read this book and was blown away at the level of detail and just how exact everything was. This guy Chaikin is a madman.
So you're not admiring necessarily the work. Well, I'm sure you admire the work, but you're not necessarily admiring the work. You wish you had that job.
Yeah, well, I thought it was a book you wish you had written, and to be able to spend years doing research, interviewing astronauts, and hanging out in Florida at Cape Canaveral, boy, that sounds like a good job to me.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
And it's a great book. The book is mind-blowing. I have it, again, if you want to borrow it, whenever you get done with The Hitchhiker's Guide, and Red Mars, and Blue Mars, and Green Mars, the trilogy.
There's a whole bunch of those colors of Mars.
Yes.
The book that I wish had been written is What I Really Meant by Jesus H. Christ.
Well, it's funny, because that ties into my book that hadn't been written.
Yeah. Well, I really think that there are so many people who are interpreting, you know, what happened, and they're using it to their own ends, and in a lot of cases, to very bad and destructive, deceitful ends. I really wish he came back and wrote that and said, this is what I really meant. This is what I was saying. Don't put words in my mouth.
Exactly. A book you wish you hadn't been written. I think you know where I'm going here. And my choice was The Bibli.
Yeah, yeah.
The Bible. And, you know, there's a lot of words of wisdom in there. But again, there's a lot of people who misinterpret it. So if it just didn't exist, they would have nothing to misinterpret. At least this book. There'd be many other things. There's many other holy texts claiming to be the way and the path. But, you know, that's my choice. And this isn't something I want to get in a fight over with anybody. But, you know, there's more evidence for Bigfoot than there is for God. And all these people just believe it. It's got to be true. Okay, fine. Woo! Anyway, go ahead.
He's pointing at me when he says that. Well, and here's the thing. You know, I take umbrage at that. I'm umbered. And I've seen a couple of people, especially the person who sent us the
which part are you umbraging?
I'm umbraging the fact that you're saying that you wish the book hadn't been written, but you're only taking offense to what people have done in the name of the Bible, not necessarily anything specific in the Bible.
Okay.
And that's like saying, okay, I wish that Metallica hadn't written that song because of what happened in Columbine. You know,
I'm not sure I agree with that, but
I think that, like I said, there are a lot of misinterpretations. There are a lot of people who are.
I don't think Metallica had anything to do with Columbine.
Well, there are a lot of people who think that the heavy metal music these kids were listening
to. It's the D&D.
It's the D&D. That's what it is. I think that the fact that black trench coats were produced is what caused it to happen.
Well, And it's just my choice.
Right. No, it's fine. And my answer to this one is none. Absolutely none. There is not one book on this planet that I think should not be written. And I don't care what anyone says. I don't think that book has anything to do with the fact that someone chose to kill people. That book had someone's ideas in it. Someone's ideas are not taking action and killing
people. Well, your statement that you don't think there's a book that shouldn't have been written is actually a pretty profound statement that a lot of people would take umbrage with, because there's a lot of people who would, you know, burn books and believe in
censorship.
And
I have a problem with those people.
And this isn't a thing. This isn't a censorship thing. But in general, I just think religion is bad and all religious books should not have existed.
Well, we're going to have to disagree with this one.
I knew we would.
What's your next
number
one?
Number eight. Well, apparently you have the same book for two questions here. I'm actually not reading anything right now, so I got nothing for
number
eight.
You're reading the piece of paper in front of you.
Well, I've actually been doing a lot more cinema and stuff than books in the past couple of years. I haven't actually sat down and read anything. Actually, the last thing I read was really geeky. It was Neil Armstrong's autobiography, and that was about a year ago. But
well, you know what? You should take this as motivation to start reading something, because I think everyone should always have a book going.
I absolutely agree. I don't disagree.
All right, I've got two going. Well, ooh. All right.
Yeah, but it's only one.
All right, I've said this several times. I got The Hitchhiker's Guide going right now. I'm rereading that. But the only reason why I'm saying that I've got two going is I'm in between books.
That's a bad place to be, man.
Right, it's like in between jobs. There's a Kevin J. Anderson series that's going on. It's called The Saga of Seven Sons. In a lot of ways, this is kind of lame, but it's one of those soap opera-ish kind of sci-fi. I think there's like 1,200 books in this series.
It's like the Schmengies.
Right. I don't even know which book I'm on, which is what's crazy about this thing. But I've just finished the last one that was out in hardcover and took it out from the library. And I'm waiting for the next one to be released. So, in the meantime, I'm reading Hitchhiker's Guide.
Mm-hmm. H2G2.
That's how I've got it listed.
H2G2G or something.
H2G2.
Book that you've been meaning to read. And I have two, actually. So I'm going to say two. I don't care about the meme and the only one. Because you had two.
We can make rules.
So I'm going to have the two.
We can make rules. This is our okay. meme.
Two books I've been meaning to read, On the Road by Jack Kerouac and The Great Gatsby.
I love that book. I was going to be putting that one on my desert island, but I said, you know what? I need something that's going to last a little bit longer.
Yeah, and that's why I chose Shakespeare. But yeah, those are my two.
Great Gatsby. Great book. And you know what? I don't care what anyone says. It might be cliche. There might be a lot of these books that are cliche, you know, like Hitchhiker's Guide and Martian Chronicles. Any of these books that we've mentioned, that they could be considered cliche. But the reason why they're cliche is because they're so damn good and rich. Great Gatsby is a good one. Mm-hmm. Really good one. One that I've been meaning to read,
mm-hmm.
World is Flat by Tom Friedman.
Oh, yeah.
This is a nonfiction book.
It's out now.
Yeah.
It's pretty recent.
Yeah, and he just put out a new edition of it, too. I've got the old edition, but this one's about the global economy.
Mm.
And I can't say a whole lot about it other than I'm meaning to read this one. It's been sitting on my shelf for a long time, but it's one of those that I know I have to tackle, but... I want to do some lighter reading, like Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah. So are we going to play the song?
Tunes? Yeah, let's play it.
All right. What do we got? We got, well, it's actually one of the songs that we didn't gong on our gong show like a month ago.
Before we play the song, one thing I want to say is, if you've got any other comments about what we've said about our books, or if you've got any other suggestions about the books, send them to feedback, please. But here's the song.
It's a band called Skankin'
Pickle.
Skankin' Pickle, and the song is Thick Ass Stout.
Thank you. I got to go and do your bartender. Ask the boat, gas the boat, we're down inside the bar. Surround it, do your brains around the bar.
Nice ending there.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Good tune, though. I really like the horn arrangements.
Scare.
Yeah, so we're not going to talk about Who Wants to Be a Superhero.
We're going to have to save that because I actually did get to see it. It was pretty funny.
And they're eliminating like two per show now, and it's next week's going to be the final at this rate.
I know, and Stan Lee seemed kind of ticked off. All right, let's go to the meeting. We're going to have an elimination right now.
Yeah, in the middle of the show. He's doing elimination. So I think that's it. Wait a minute. I'm going to talk about this film. Munson Williams Proctor Institute. It was a film called Water. It's an India production, the country of India.
Put it together.
Why we played the Hindi intro today.
Wow. It all comes full circle.
Mm-hmm. Directed by Deepa Mehta, D-E-E-P-A-M-E-H-T-A, 2005 film, 117 minutes. And this is actually a pretty disturbing film. At least it was for me. Apparently, these 2,000-year-old texts, not unlike the Bible, which to me is just a fiction, have decreed in the country of India that for no good reason, when a woman becomes a widow, she has three choices. She can throw herself on her husband's funeral pyre and die with him, or she can go to these, what do they call them, ashrams, which are kind of like an old folks' home for widows where you're just... they shave your head bald and you can't wear colors anymore and you can only wear white and you're treated like you have the plague. You're really a second-class citizen. It's a country full of castes in general, but you're the lowest caste.
I was going to say, you mentioned this before, that they can't wear color, and that's a pretty big thing. I mean, as far as I know, in the Indian culture, you know, it's very colorful. Very colorful.
The wraps that the women wear.
The saris
are very colorful. And I'm actually not going to talk about this too much, but this is the story, because this takes place around 1938, when women were allowed to marry very young. In this particular movie, we follow the plight of a young girl named Chuya, C-H-U-Y-I-A, who was married very early, like at the age of 8.
Wow.
To an older guy. He dies. She's a widow at the age of 10, and she's put in one of these ashrams. And it's just tragic. It's unbelievably... I was so angry watching this film. And this is not a criticism of, you know, Indian culture, but this rule's got to go. I mean, this is just dumb. And it's just not happening in 1938. Apparently, at the end of the film, they put up a statistic that in the 2001 Indian census, millions of women who are widows still live like this.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
And it really did make me angry. And I found it very disturbing. I didn't sleep well last night, actually, to be honest. Truly a fantastic piece of work. One of the things that really stood out for me in this film was the score, because it used Celtic music.
Really?
Yeah, you would have expected to hear a lot of tabla and...
Sitar,
like in our intro today.
Right.
But they played music that was definitely Celtic. They played music that was definitely Appalachian, like a lot of the music you would have heard in October Sky, mountain music with like hammer dulcimers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they did a lot of pop Indian music as well. I'm probably going to go out and buy the soundtrack to this because I thought the music was phenomenal. Great film. Don't need to see it too soon because I found it very disturbing. But, I mean, in terms of people's rights and equality, it's a wonderful piece of work. It was photographed beautifully, and one thing that they tied in quite nicely was it took place in 1938. That was around the time when Gandhi was finally released by the Brits from prison, and he makes a little train stop in all the local villages and talks to people. So we see a very old Gandhi speaking to the crowds and probably talking out. He had made some statements about how these rules with respect to widows were outdated and ridiculous. So Gandhi, great guy, obviously.
Yes, great guy.
Love them.
It's an overstatement.
Yeah. Anyway, this show is like way too long. I think we got to call it at this point.
Yeah, that's it.
There you go. And we didn't say our names again. So this is Rich Wilgus.
John Tallarico.
And collectively, we are bloodthirsty vegetarians.
Yeah, if you didn't get the Hindi part. He did say it.
He did say in the Hindi part, yeah. Very good, my friend Raj. Send us email, feedback@bloodyveg.com.
Yeah, and we're going to be doing another meme next week. We haven't decided which one, but we'll let you know that at that time.
Yeah, check out the blog, bloodyveg.com, and all the good stuff that goes along with it, our forum, and what else do we got up there? Illegal MP3s, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, we got free t-shirts. Oh, no, paid for t-shirts.
Yeah, yeah. We got to get the mug. I want a coffee mug, so we have to put the artwork up for a mug.
Yeah, I think I'm going to add the panties.
Cool. Anyway, do all the good stuff we just told you to do, and remember, you're listening to VIB.